Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hey, and welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Here today, joined by two guys in from the lovely Beantown, Cambridge area for the cookbook conference happening at the Roger Smith Hotel, Bouchard and Adam Solomon.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good, good.
Hey, how are you?
So, the two of you work for, well, not just work, Bruce owns the
Harvard Common Press in Boston, Massachusetts. Yeah, I've been there 30 years.
See, you purchased it in what, 1980?
In 1981, March of 1981.
And it's primarily cookbooks now, or has it been?
It is primarily cookbooks. We've published in several areas over the years. We have focused exclusively on two areas in the last 10 years, child care and parenting. Actually, our best-selling book is a book called The Nursing Mother's Companion, which I suppose is a different kind of food.
Breastfeeding.
Breastfeeding, yeah. Exactly.
It's very important. Most people's first food.
It is indeed. But about 95% of what we now do is cookbooks.
Excellent. And you're in town for the first annual. Well, I'm saying annual because I'm assuming it's
we're still talking about that. Right. We need to get through the first one.
The first Roger Smith Cookbook Conference happening at the Roger Smith Hotel here in Manhattan. And this was, over a year in the making.
That's right.
How were you brought into this project?
Social media is an amazing thing, and it has changed our lives. And last May, we actually connected with Molly O'Neill through Facebook. We actually were throwing a party at IACP in Austin. I invited a lot of my Facebook friends, and Molly was one of those. And she wasn't going to IACP, but she kindly responded she couldn't come to our party, and we developed this relationship, and then it turned out she was going to blog her food, and we had dinner with her, and you know, she's now, I consider her to be one of my close friends, and she introduced us to Andy Smith last May, who was a friend of hers, and I believe she had worked with him on a food conference that he had done several years before, and that just started our relationship with Andy. Andy said, I want to do a conference that talks about the history of cookbooks, that talks about cookbooks today, and also talks about the future of the cookbook. And he said, I know nothing about the future of the cookbook. And we said, well, of course, neither do we. But we would be, you know, really happy to help you with that. And so we've set up 8 of those panels and picked the panelists, and it's a pretty star-studded group.
And Molly is the author of what cookbooks?
One Big Table is definitely her top cookbook. She's a top contributor to the New York Times. She actually pioneered, I would say, social networking in the food space back in the late 90s with a spin-off project around One Big Table that was really meant to bring people online and get them talking about and thinking about food. And the manifestation of One Big Table, what has it become in book form, is stories about food from around the country. So it's really an incredible project.
Yeah, I mean, have there been a lot of situations where cookbook authors from different publishers from different countries get together? Is there a forum? Is there a space for people to converse?
It's a funny dynamic, because I think in many ways there are disparate organizations that try to do that. But I think the most preeminent of these would be the International Association of Culinary Professionals, IACP. But it's not just cookbooks. And I think that what makes the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference so compelling is the fact that we are really focusing on the cookbook specifically and using that as a discussion point.
And you said from, you know, historical to today to the future, you have a whole bunch of different panelists, an amazing cast of characters. The station's own Mitchell Davis, I think, is one of them. Guests that have been on this show and others, like Charlotte Druckman, Dory Greenspan, Melissa Hamilton, Christopher Hersheimer, Amanda Hesser, Joe Nathan. I mean, this is, you know,
it's a star-studded group.
It's kind of amazing. Where does the conference start? Is it chronological? Are you starting from the first cookbook and then going forwards, or is it a smattering of ideas?
It It's really more a smattering of ideas, and you can cross pollinate. You can go to any of the panels that are going to be on the history of the cookbook or the cookbook today or ours. But things are also laid out so that if you really, for instance, want to focus on the future of the cookbook, you can. There are also some workshops on Thursday. The conference is, main part of the conference is Friday, Saturday, but the workshops are on Thursday. And just as a, for instance, we have a workshop from 1 until 5 o'clock, which is on the future of the cookbook, and it's called the
Cookbook for the Year 2020, an Experimental Case Study.
Yeah, but what's going to happen during that workshop? You're not going to all don spacesuits and eat astronaut ice cream. And
we're going to throw our hands up in exasperation. No, it's actually going to be a very interesting conversation around cookbooks. What we've done is really created a case study by which we take a publishing house that is trying to innovate, an author that is trying to bring her recipes to market as a quote-unquote cookbook, but we have not defined what that cookbook actually is. Is it a print book? Is it a ebook? Is it an app, a series of websites? The group of, we currently have about 60 people involved in this Thursday workshop, we'll break them down into teams of roughly 9 to 10 people each. Each table will have a team leader, and each team will work through the marketing, sales, editorial, and distribution decisions to bring those products to market. The last piece of that event will be a presentation back to the group to talk about exactly what is this vision that you've crafted for the cookbook of the future.
And this is something all cookbook authors, well, at least should go through prior to putting and marketing themselves out there.
One would hope.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think it's just for cookbook authors or publishers either. I think we're expecting a very diverse conversation with agents, editors, people who are website entrepreneurs in the food space. Because ultimately, we're not, even though we're calling it a cookbook conference, which it is, it's also a recipe content conference. And recipe content is everything that's around us, whether it's online, in print, or in some other form.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating you say recipe content, because content has changed via so many different platforms, mm-hmm. as you said, print, digital, apps. Are there others outside of those big main three?
Well, just as an example of what the Harvard Common Press is doing, we realized several years ago that our main competition was really no longer other cookbook publishers. It was no longer really the food magazines. It was no longer the food section of the newspaper that comes out on Wednesday. It's online recipes. That's where the action's at, and they're free. So that makes this whole game very complicated. As a result of that, we actually made an investment in a company called Yumly.com. It's an online recipe site, and it identifies essentially people's taste preferences. And it's done extremely well. But we decided, if they were going to free online recipes were going to be our undoing, we might as well be a part of that and try to make it work. So, that's a whole nother extreme.
Yeah. So, I mean, that sounds singular rather than bound. It doesn't sound like a collection of pages, but, one recipe at a time being what people most often go towards.
Right. I mean, it does lead us down a bit of a rabbit hole here, where something that Bruce and I were actually actively exploring about a year ago in conjunction with Yumly was, could we charge for those single recipes? And I call it a rabbit hole because as you start to go further and further down this path, how the question of what is the lowest common denominator in cooking that you can charge for. And we've come away from that and really started to think that, well, we as publishers, not only do we produce single recipes, but our value is as curators as well. These 10 recipes go together because of these reasons. As authors, this is the same thing that we bring to the table. A recipe in isolation is only as good as the end result, whereas a collection of recipes can tell a story, can have a narrative, can really have a personality beyond just what each individual recipe is, and I think that that's where the value of these collections lie.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is a fascinating thing that traditional publishing, people thought of this collection, and how do you curate a new collection by the speed and, I'd call it limitations of the internet sometimes, because to sit there and cycle through or, have 200, 300 recipes with you at all times seems a little daunting at most, even though it's...
I think it can be incredibly daunting. And I, as a cookbook publisher, we're trying to identify what are those kinds of cookbooks that still work in the day and age of the internet. I mean, I will give an example of that. I think appliance cookbooks are very successful. And the reason for it is if you own a slow cooker, as many people do, and many people use their slow cooker 2, 3, 4 times a week, are you going to really take the time to get online and find a free recipe? That takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
I would argue that paying $15 or $20 for a book that has, you know, 100, 150, 200 recipes, it's far more economical to do that than it is to go online. So I think as publishers, if we're going to still continue to publish these hard copy and digital books that have a story to them, we have to figure out what people are willing to pay up for.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up appliance, because I think of it as, you know, a single subject.
Sure.
A lot of Harvard Common Press's books focus more on single subject.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the latest ones are beer cocktails, best quick breads, dessert jars.
Mm-hmm.
But you have someone myopically, but not in a bad way, focus, and then they can experiment within a smaller, you know,
it's,
set.
It's so funny you brought that up. We just had this conversation in the office yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you there on the wall?
Oh, yeah.
A fly?
We tap all our guests for the week before. I heard things I shouldn't have heard.
It's bizarre because, you know, I've been in this business for a long time and you know, for 30 years now. And when I first came into the business, single subject was very big. I remember there was an eggplant book that had sold 500,000 copies, which 30 years ago was a big, big number. And then single subject went out and people weren't buying them. And now I think people are buying them. And again, I think it's a reaction to the internet. And if you really like beer and if you're really into beer cocktails, you'll pay $12.95 for a beer cocktail book, right?
And it's funny too, because in many ways when I think of our program, something that I came on with the Harvard Common Press about 4 years ago now, and something that initially struck me was that, you know, Harvard Common Press, as much as we say we're a cookbook publisher, I think that our to your point about single subjects, we're sort of a publisher with many different niches. So, you know, we do barbecue, we do vegetarian cooking, we do the appliance cooking. We don't do general weeknight books that don't have personality or story behind them. There has to be a reason that this is being published. And I think that that's part of the focus on what I would call like single subject, because we do have these very tight verticals.
Yeah, can I just mention D.D. Emmons' Vegetarian Planet is one of my favorite cookbooks. And I don't think
wonderful.
I ever realized it was Harvard Common Press.
Oh, yeah.
But having spent my educational years in Boston, Cambridge, going to what is now Club Passim, or was.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Still there.
Yeah, and Cafe Deluxe. Yeah. I think she helped open up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she was a...
And of course, Veggie Planet after the same name.
Yeah,
so great pizza there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, one of our major cookbooks. And thanks to David Strymish from New England Mobile Book Fair. He brought that to our attention. And we took it and ran with it.
Because let's get away from single subject as far as the inanimate, and let's go to the person. I mean, mm-hmm. you have someone like D.D. Emmons. You guys have also won, what, 2 James Beard Awards?
Oh, we've won a number of them. I can't recall, but we've been nominated for many, many more, and ICP Awards as well,
but
yes.
Cheryl and Bill Jameson.
Certainly.
Yeah, with both Smoke and Spice and Border Grill?
Yep. They were really our first serious cookbook authors. They actually came to us. We were publishing a travel guide series, and we loved working with them, and they said they wanted to do a cookbook, and they did a book called The Rancho de Chamayo Cookbook, which was a local restaurant book. And then Bill was from Texas. He wanted to do Texas home cooking, and that book did well. And then as a result of his traveling around Texas, they learned a ton about barbecue. And that's when we did Smoke and Spice. And at the time, even as we were publishing it, we didn't realize the number of smokers that were being sold every year, and there was no book for anyone cooking on a smoker.
Yeah.
So our book took off. It won the James Beard Award. The whole timing was fabulous.
Yeah, so, I mean, that comes back to single subject appliance.
It's really an appliance cookbook, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
But talk about two authors that really just, I mean, you know, research, you know, tell the stories, really are incredibly diligent about the ways in which they convey on the page, you know, all the different things they found. I mean, Bill and Cheryl are authors that really get what it means to take a story and make it into a recipe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, being based in Cambridge, do you feel an affinity towards New England about publishing cookbooks of that ilk, be it, you know, seafood, be it chowder?
No. No, honestly, we really don't. Maybe that's because I'm from Chicago originally. Yeah. Adam and I travel the United States. You know, we have 20 trips coming up this year. We're all over the country. We love living in New England.
Sure.
I'm going to speak for myself. You'll have to speak for yourself. He's from New York originally. So do we love New England? Sure. Do we publish some New England stuff? Sure. But we feel we're much broader than that.
Yeah. Let's dip a little into the personal lives. So a Chicagoan and a New Yorker. I mean, what did you grow up eating, and what did you grow up cooking?
Well, so I come from a family of four boys. I am the second in command, and you know, parents. Obviously, it was during a time when many of our parents were all working and doing their thing, and so I actually did a lot of the cooking for my younger brothers and for my older brother too, sort of ironically. But it was, I guess, perhaps as a precursor to my current interest in cooking. I did a lot of roasting and baking, and it was a lot of chicken dishes, as you can imagine, because it's so versatile. And I think now you will not come to my apartment without finding probably 10 or 12 frozen chicken breasts just waiting to be defrosted. Very, very simple, but, you know, utilitarian when you're a young kid trying to get food on the table for six people.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember the first cookbooks that you cooked out of?
I remember, see, this sounds very cliche, but it was actually a copy of The Joy of Cooking that my mom still has, and I could not, for the life of me, decipher how to follow one of the recipes. And so I finally, like, sat down with my grandmother, it was, at one point, and she just walked me through each individually. And so that was, it was a great experience because you have that personal side, and I still remember, like, sitting down with my grandmother and working through one of the recipes, and it was just a nice connection.
Yeah. I mean, from then to now, I'm sure you read cookbooks differently.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Do you remember the system that you used to try to break it down before you had your grandmother, you know, so kindly interpret how to cook a chicken?
You know, it was one of the things, and to this day, this sounds kind of bad. I was never a huge cookbook person when I was younger. I mean, I definitely depend more on tastes and flavors and like how things go together. You know, things like a lemon paprika chicken. It wasn't necessarily about reading a recipe so much as it was using a recipe to sort of see what kinds of flavors were being put together, and then using that to reinterpret the recipe. It's still a little bit more that way, although now, today, I'm more of a armchair cookbook reader than I was, say, 10 years ago.
And you mean reader, well, at least I feel this way about cookbooks. I read through all the text, yes. And then often get to the, I flip through, look at
yes,
the picture.
Exactly.
But I actually sit down and read cookbooks cover to cover now.
Yep.
And I don't think I did that, you know, even 5 years
ago.
Well,
it's a lovely thing to hear, because that's why I think cookbooks are still going to sell. So yeah. I hope there are more of you out there.
Yeah. So, great. I don't know much about Chicagoan cuisine, well, other than hot dogs.
I'm so amused by Adam's story. You know, we've worked together now for 4 years, and I've never heard his story about Joy of Cooking. Because that's the first cookbook for sure that I ever cooked out of. I was not a cook when I was a kid. I cleaned the dishes. My mother was an amazing cook, and my job in my house was to clean the dishes. And today I am the world's best dish cleaner. And I am serious, in the world. I get invited to parties just so I can do, you know, the dishes. And I did not start cooking until I went off to college. And by the time I got to college, I was not a dormitory guy, so I lived off campus practically my whole time. So I had to cook and fend for myself. But it was very simple cooking. It was Joy of Cooking. Then I married my wife, who's an amazing, amazing cook, and to try to compete with that was ridiculous. So I still do the dishes. So, you know, I'm sorry. I'm saying this on air. I don't think I've ever said it publicly, but it's the truth.
But I see a single subject appliance book coming out someday about how to wash the best dishes.
Thank you. I hadn't even thought about it, but we'll go back and talk about it.
Well, we're gonna come right back and talk about what's gonna be cooking up at the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference.
Fantastic.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Today with Bruce Shaw and Adam Solomon of Harvard Common Press and the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference. We're going to dive a little more back into it. We know a little about what you can cook and what dishes you can clean. But what are you looking for out of the cookbook conference? What workshops do you have? What panelists? What are you most excited about and what are you most fearful of?
Sure. I think the conference, we make no mistake about the outcome, which I think is that it's going to raise more questions than it answers. The future of the cookbook especially is an area through which you again can start to go down these paths and really find some interesting discussions that perhaps you wouldn't have already thought of. Ultimately, what we see, the workshop on Thursday that we were talking about before, as well as the Friday and Saturday panels, the benefit of those is really to give people I call it a sandbox in which to play and think and not necessarily feel that they have to give up company secrets, but they can also brainstorm with like-minded peers. We've been, as the organizers, obviously privy to some of the planning that's going on with some of the panels. And you know, we have a great panel on working with bloggers that's led by Casey Benedict, and she is a very, very smart and savvy, I would say, food entrepreneur. She runs the website kitchen-play.com and is also the founder of Eat Right Retreat, and you know, really is trying to find ways to bridge the gap between bloggers and brands, and publishers are brands and are looking for ways to work with bloggers, so it's a great tie-in. We also have a very interesting panel on independent cookbook stores and independent bookstores as well, and the ways in which they are starting to reinvent themselves. We've seen an incredible growth in the interest in bringing authors into cookbook stores and to do events. It's funny, Bruce was out in Chicago over Thanksgiving and met with Naomi McInley at the Lake Forest Bookstore. And they work with 15 libraries to actually reach about 800,000 consumers through Twitter and Facebook and their newsletter to sponsor events and really get the word out. And that kind of reach is something that you would never expect from an independent bookstore.
I know. I've been seeing you have Celia Sachs coming from Omnivore.
We do, yes.
And people do make the trek up to Noe Valley to go see her. Bonnie Slotnick, who is a gem in the West Village.
Mm. Certainly.
Do you tell people not to buy on Amazon and go independent?
We can't do that.
Yeah.
We just simply can't do that. I mean, Amazon's very, very important. I think they do some things brilliantly for us. I think the independents are going to become quite a force in the next couple of years. I think particularly the independents, and I'm talking about both independent bookstores and the cookbook stores, I think those that get involved with social media can bring so much to the table. As a publisher, we're beginning to realize, you know, as a small publisher, it's always been difficult for us to travel our authors around the country, but we're realizing there are now huge benefits to doing that because of social media. You know, if you go to a signing at Celia's bookstore in San Francisco, and she's, you know, on Twitter all over the place and Facebook, that word's getting out across the country. It's not just in San Francisco. And so, you know, I think some of these independents, and again, Adam's already mentioned the Lake Forest bookstore. I was just blown away by what they're doing. And apparently there are a couple libraries out there that have these fancy kitchens and they bring in authors. And so there are a lot of those kinds of opportunities. And if you can tie that into social media, it could become really big. And I think really give a life to the independents, which, you know, we love the independents.
Yeah. And they get to preview books that, because of Amazon's ranking system, might get buried sometimes
right.
too, and highlight authors that wouldn't necessarily get the media shown on them.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, they bring in a lot of books from England and Australia. I mean, we've gone out of our way in our travels to really go to all the cookbook stores, and I think we have gone to just about all of them now, and many of the independent bookstores. But the cookbook stores have gotten really smart about bringing in books that you're not seeing in other places.
Yeah. So you mentioned bloggers.
Yeah.
Being a very vital part of this industry right
certainly,
now.
Certainly,
a lot of bloggers turn into authors, into cookbook authors these days.
And cookbook buyers.
And, yeah, of course, cookbook buyers. Are you trying to tell traditional authors to blog more and show the benefits of that as well?
It's certainly it is a direction we're going in. I mean, one of the things I think that I particularly appreciate about our position as a small publisher is that we have a very we have a great ability to work one-on-one with our authors. And actually, we'll get into this a little bit before we go, but there's a new Facebook group that Bruce launched called Cookbook Friends, and it's an interesting story related to the conference. But I did want to say I was having a back and forth with one person in particular on there who was trying to figure out self-publishing versus publishing with a publisher, and we got into this big conversation about promotion and working with authors, and she's like, well, I'd love to talk with you more. And I said, well, that's what your publisher brings to the table.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we work very, very closely with our authors. We build blogs for them when they say that, you know, there's a commitment there to blog and to get out there and talk more about what they're doing. And I think the blog and the tweeting and the Facebooking as a whole is very important because it allows them to be a personality and allows their personality to come through more so than just Harvard Common Press.
Because do you think past cookbooks have been more of this relic? It comes out, it gets put on the shelf, it gets used, but there is no social attachment to it. There is no personal, you know, nuance to it.
It's an interesting question. I think the social attachment is changing. I think that the social attachment used to be that I could go over to a friend's house and see a cookbook that had been passed down from his grandmother and see all the handwritten notes that are in there, and there is a social interplay there. But it's not exactly the same when you can reach a million people on Twitter with a recipe or with a personal story or with a, hey, you know, I was just cooking this and here's something that is going to stick with me after cooking it. It's a much more immediate and instantaneous social reaction that we get. How permanent it is really, I think, an ongoing question that we'll have to see.
It's always been how to archive the temporal.
Right.
You know? And is that a solution you're hoping to find out or hoping to explore during the conference?
I think it will come out. I don't think we've directed it in a way that we're necessarily saying, like, how do the social aspects of the cookbook become more permanent over time? Because I don't think that there's an answer there yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about the unanswerable. The future.
Sure.
I mean, what are you hoping to get out of the future as far as cookbooks go? You could talk about your own personal futures as well if you like, but I know a cookbook as a certain thing, as a book, as pages, now as e-cookbooks, as apps. What is the next frontier? What is the newest platform?
I think it's just really impossible to say. I mean, I think what we hope to, at least what I hope to, and I suspect Adam hopes to get out of this, is some new and fresh ideas. You know, I don't think there's been a forum where we can all get together and talk. It's all been done in bits and pieces. It's all been done. I mean, I'm particularly excited about our workshop on Thursday, where I think people are going to really be able to, you know, talk things through and learn from each other. This is a funny thing for a cookbook publisher to say, but I'm not entirely convinced that our world in 4 or 5 years is going to be about two covers and what sits between those two covers. I mean, I think it gets back to our investment in Yumly. We are real believers in online. And we really believe that food is moving online. I think other things are too. I think travel is a great example of that. But I think food is moving online, and I think we have to figure out exactly what that means. And I think it's not necessarily a hard copy book anymore.
And I think to Bruce's point, you know, the investment that we've been making online is really, you know, it does tie in bloggers. It does tie in a lot of these social elements. We've actually just launched a new web initiative. It's called blogeats.com. And it's run by our cookbook editor, Dan Rosenberg. And it's really meant to uncover some of the new and innovative and sort of flying under the radar food bloggers doing interesting things. Does that, via its use of recipes and its use of really curating what's out there, in some way become what people think of as a cookbook, quote unquote? You know, I don't know, but it really does. There is a voice there and an expert voice, and I don't want to pretend that the world is only open to expert voices, because one of the great things the internet has provided us is a forum for all voices. But it's on some level, I do hope, when we think about the future of recipe content, that consumers still realize that there is value to having someone guide you, and in guiding, there is monetary value and something that should be paid for.
I think that's just incredibly well put. I don't think it's a question of what this is all going to look like.
Right.
I do think it's a question of curation,
yeah.
And I think that's critical.
Yeah.
That's something we absolutely stand for, but whether it's the old-fashioned book or whether it's online, mm-hmm. no matter where it is, it's curated content, mm-hmm. and that's really important.
What cookbooks out today do you feel like have some of the best curated materials?
Oh, there's so many.
That's a really, you know, I will tell you this, and it's not an unknown This is not an unknown quantity. I mean, I'm sure many have heard it before. But one of the, I would say one of the cookbooks we were talking about ad nauseum over the last holiday season a year ago was Dora Greenspan's Around My French Table. And I think because that is something that you really take and you hold on to, it's not a transient element in the cookbook world. It's something that I think people will continue to talk about years from now.
Is it not transient because of its heft and weight as well?
I mean, totally.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes it's a diet to, or like a workout to carry around cookbooks.
But you know, that said, I don't want to equate curation with, you know, heavy four color books and beautiful four color books. I mean, there are plenty of great two color books that really deserve that as well. I think back to Cheryl and Bill Jamison. I mean, not to toot our own horns, but their books are really an example of people who do their homework and really care about the recipe.
Yeah, our best-selling cookbooks, oddly, are two-color books. They're not our four-color
right.
books.
Yeah.
By far and away, our two-color books right. way outsell our four-color books. It's really yeah. interesting yeah. because our content's really, really
exactly,
good.
Exactly,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough to see what I think is one of the first cookbooks in the U.S., Virginia's Housewives.
Right.
I always forget the title of it, but that thing obviously was not a four-color book, nor was it a professional. I mean, she was
right.
an amateur, but I mean, obviously not. But she was also not a voice that was used to being heard.
Right.
And it created this foundation for other, you know, maids and housewives to start trading cookbooks. So it's funny. I see during this proliferation of bloggers, everyone realizes that they do have an inherent voice, but it also is extremely important, like you say, to have a very clear, concise, and curated voice. And how do you teach that to somebody?
I actually don't know.
There's some people who would argue that there are many bloggers out there who have not been trained to really, really, truly write
right.
Recipes. And you know, I think it's one of the reasons bloggers go to the conferences. We go to all these food blogging conferences, and they're trying to learn that and get better and take better photographs. I think the big issue here is how do you take all these curated recipes that are now in book form, and how do these people who have spent their lives developing really creative recipes, how can they make a living?
Right.
How can they get paid for that? Because they always have been, and it should still happen somehow.
Right, exactly.
I'm hoping there's going to be a genius at the cookbook conference who can solve that. For us.
Because it's true. I mean, you're the roads in which you walk are only as full of potential as those that walk with you. And I think in many senses, bloggers, you know, they have a lot of potential. But then you have, as Bruce said, these writers and these people who were journalists who are getting paid for content so many years ago, and that bar is slowly coming down because you have a lot of great writers who are bloggers. Who are willing to do it for free. And that's not to say that all blogging content should be pay for content, but I think that each and every one of us within the cookbook and the recipe world has to realize that we're not an island and we have an impact on everyone else that's in this ecosystem.
Yeah. And talking about others, there are more than just bloggers and writers
right.
there. There are agents, there
right.
are editors, you have food photographers, stylists. I mean, it's not a one-person army
right.
To be able
And how do they all make money? And how does a good photographer make money?
Yeah.
Because now all the bloggers, actually, they take great photos,
yeah.
don't they?
Yeah.
They truly do.
Oh, no.
So,
that's for another show.
Yeah, that's for another show, right.
Excellent. But no, it is. A lot of people try to wear a ton of hats.
Sure.
But sometimes it takes a team. And I'm at least hoping that this conference shows other people that, you know, delegation sometimes is the best thing you can
right.
do, to find your teammate, to find someone that strengthens you and your weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
and be it having an agent that stands up for you, or, you know, a stylist,
right.
prop stylist that brings in the right plate for that dish.
Right, so. Exactly. I mean, cookbooks have always been a very sort of community-based thing, whether you're cooking out of them and serving it to friends, or whether you're producing them and working with editors and authors and agents and photographers to make it happen. So there's no reason why that should now become a singular process where we're all on our own in this.
You put that so well, by the way, because I think one of the things I've always loved about being involved with the Harvard Common Press, which is a very mm-hmm. small company, there, you know, there have been anywhere between 10 and 15 people at any one time, yet we all work together on each and
totally.
Every single solitary book we do. And because of that, we end up producing something that's just better than the author,
exactly.
better than us,
exactly.
better than anybody. And you know, I, I'd hate to lose that process, because that's that process is a part of what has produced not just great books, but great recipes. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. Yeah. See where it goes.
Well, I think in this day and age of community-supported agriculture, et cetera, it shows that it takes a village.
Yeah, right. It's true.
Right.
Excellent. Right. The Cookbook Conference website is cookbookconf.com. C-O-N-F.
Exactly.
.com. Are there still seats available?
No. We started the Facebook group, and I think only 30 people had signed on, and 4 days later we were sold out, 250 yeah. people. Yeah. Social media, I'm just so sold on it. It's incredible. So no, it's been sold out, unfortunately, for many, because we have a long, long wait list. But we'll see what happens next year.
We will
year.
Be streaming certain sessions live on the cookbookconf.com website, and all of the videos will also be made available after the conference as well. So stay tuned for more information.
Excellent. And like I said, annual. I expect many more.
let's see. We've heard a lot about that the last couple of days. Let's get through Saturday, all right?
Excellent. I'm looking forward to hearing about what is the future.
Yes, definitely.
You can call me in your time machine.
As are we.
Excellent. But thank you, Bruce, Adam.
Thank you very much for having us on. Very enjoyable.
Cookbookconf.com again. Correct. Check it out. There will be some live streaming content. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.com. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.